Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Stella Blue Coffee is more than just great coffee. It's coffee with a purpose. Introducing We Brew to Rescue, a nationwide campaign using proceeds from our new ready-to-drink cans to help fund 1,000 pet adoptions this year. Every can you crack open helps a real pet find a real home. Simple as that. Made with 100% Colombian coffee, each 11-ounce can delivers smooth, drinkable energy with a boost of protein. Available in espresso cafe mocha and espresso sweet cream. Built for mornings, long days, and everything in between. Drink Stella Blue, fuel your day, and help save a pet's life. You can follow our progress in real time throughout the campaign by watching the adoption tracker on our site. Grab yours now at StellaBlueCoffee.com, Amazon, and select retailers nationwide.
Trust no one and accuse everyone. And Who's the Bad Guy? The official Barstool Sports social deduction game from the brilliant mind of Nick Tirrani. In what's quickly becoming the most popular new party game around, players are secretly assigned unique roles, with the good guys trying to expose the bad guys and the bad guys doing everything they can to stay hidden. Each game unfolds under alternating day and night phases, with roles like the cool chick, the shy guy, the gambler, El Presidente, the mentalist, the planner, the funny guy, and more. Every round is unpredictable, chaotic, and ridiculously fun. Who's the Bad Guy is great for parties, pre-games, family gatherings, or groups who just love deception-based games. Game night will never be the same. Shop now on Walmart.com.
On this episode of Project Big Screen, we have three movies: The Moment, The Charlie XCX, Faux Music Documentary. We have Solo Mio with Kevin James and the conclusion to the worst trilogy ever made, Strangers Chapter 3. And then we will do our top 10 movies we are most anticipating for 2026. All that and more coming up on Project Big Screen. All right, Project Big Screen, episode 19, February 8th. We're recording this on Super Bowl Sunday, so congratulations if you're a fan of the Seahawks or the Patriots, and they both won, whoever the fuck won.
No, fuck both of them.
Good for you, four people on here who've never enjoyed a Super Bowl in their lifetime. Good for you.
Clemmer was alive for Namath.
No, I was alive for the Chargers, for Ken Jack.
But lost the brutal ass fuck. Like,
I watched that. I mean, at least you got there. I've never even seen a Super Bowl.
Fair. Yeah. True.
It's like fucking 40-7. That was a terrible Super Bowl. Jeez.
So here we go. Three movies today, or there are a couple movies we're going to talk about today. And it's an interesting mixed bag of things. This is going to be, when we rank the review groupings at the end of the year, this is going to be up there as one of the worst, one of the blandest.
No.
I don't know.
No.
This is one of the weakest review slates we're going to have the rest of the year. I think that's not that debatable.
I think it kind of is.
So far, for sure.
I think two of the three movies we're talking about today, I liked. I'm recommending.
Yeah, but I think it's okay. I'll retract that. It's just kind of a weak slate. Like in terms of like notoriety, release.
True. No argument here. I just talk about just the quality of the films.
A huge, huge conclusion of a trilogy. Strangers Chapter 3, Solo Mio. We'll also talk a little bit about The Moment, Charlie XCX. I'm gonna talk definitely for a moment. I don't know if anyone else saw it. I think Clemmer, you did. The Iron Lung.
Yes.
I know Ken Jack and I know we both at least finished Fallout. We'll talk about that a little bit. We do kind of our catch up at the end. So I thought about us kind of waiting for Super Bowl trailers, but they actually took a bunch of the trailers off the docket. Actually, I have a hot scoop on that, but I can't say it until next week. Oh. I have a PBS exclusive scoop next week.
A poop scoop?
Yeah. No, a good scoop. A good scoop. I know it's a good scoop, but I got to make sure I'm not gonna get the person in trouble. But there's going to be some trailers, and we'll talk about them next week. It's like Toy Story 5, Mandalorian and Grogu, Mario Galaxy, which I feel like Mario Galaxy's had like 90 trailers already. So I'm not quite sure what else more they can show. So we'll talk about the Super Bowl trailers next week.
It's a short movie, that Mario one, too, right?
And they already, I know. It's like it's a lot of footage for a movie, which I think the last one was like 70 minutes long, I feel like. Right? So I don't, yeah. I don't know. And then we will be doing anticipated movies for the rest of the year, which I don't think, if we had started, maybe Bone Temple would have been on there. But a lot of movies, that are coming out over the next couple months. What are our top 10 most anticipated for 2026? Well, let's first start out with Strangers Chapter 3, the fifth Strangers movie. There's The Strangers, which is a well-received movie. People do like The Strangers. For context, we have... just so you know, I'm not making this up. I know there's fans of this. For context, we have a coworker of ours, a good buddy of ours, Eddie. He's a big fan of The Strangers. He had been hyping up this trilogy because they came out with The Strangers, and they came out with Strangers Prey at Night. And they had this new trilogy that they're going to come out with that was going to just continue this franchise that people who are fans of horror seem to like. I don't care for either of the first two. But I think they're better than these three. And they came out with The Strangers Chapter 1, The Strangers Chapter 2, and now The Strangers Chapter 3. Chapter 1 came out in 2024. Strangers Chapter 2 came out in 2025. Chapter 3 came
October.
Out in...
yeah. October 2025, by the way. Strangers Chapter 2.
I'm gonna say something here, though. There's apparently 4 is apparently coming out.
What?
Yeah, there is apparently a fourth, which I don't quite get.
How?
It's the Ringo one.
It's pretty...
No!
I don't want to spoil it, but there's a pretty hefty amount of finality to this one, I felt.
Yeah, it's pretty fucking definite.
I don't know what...
That's not happening, Jeff. No.
So we'll talk about it in spoilers in a second, if you care. There was a moment... There was a moment that I thought, oh, I see how they're going to get to the fourth. We'll talk about that in a second. It ended up not being. It was kind of a dupe. So The Strangers Chapter 3 concludes the horror trilogy with Maya trapped in a brutal final showdown against the mass killers in the town of Venus, Oregon. Following the events of Chapter 2, wounded Maya is captured by Scarecrow and Dollface, who aim to force her into becoming a new member of their murderous group. She kills one of them in the previous movie, for those who don't remember or never saw it. What's the name? It's like, what's Pinup Girl? Is that what it is?
Yeah, Pinup Girl. Yeah,
Pinup Girl. Hell yeah, brother. Let's go. 91 minutes long, which if I'm going to give this movie one positive, at least it was 90 minutes. Like at least it wasn't 2.5 hours, 2 hours. Rennie Harlan directed this, one of the longest directorial filmographies you'll ever see. He's been directing movies since the 80s. Directed Die Hard 2. Didn't he direct Nightmare on Elm Street 4? Am I making that up?
Yep. He also did Cliffhanger.
Cliffhanger, Deep Blue Sea, and Strangers Chapter 1 through Chapter 3. Madeline Pesch, the lead, playing the girl Maya, Gabriel Brasso, in a real what a twist that role is. Emma Horvath, 3.5 million opening domestically, the worst of the Strangers franchise. Unbelievable split around tomatoes, 18%, 51% Rotten Tomatoes split. Imagine hearing like, hey, our audience score is 33% higher than our critic score. It's like, it's still a 51. IMDb, Metacritic, not great. 4.0 on IMDb, 224 Metacritic, 1.8 Letterboxd. This is, I think, the worst of all of them. Really stupid, really annoying shit horror franchise. Predictable, I guess, a little bit, though. I guess I was duped. I'm going to say predictable in one sense, but then I'll say I was duped a bit because I knew that fourth was coming out. So I thought I knew where they were going with this. The whole idea of like them trying to recruit her to be a new member of their group. I was like, oh, this is where the fourth is going to go. It's just bad. It's not interesting. I hate the characters. They're not scary to me. It's a classic example of like just unmasking too many things. Like once you start pulling the fucking wool, like once you start pulling the mask off of everything and every bit of lore and diving so deep into it, you just lose any of the mystery, any of the intrigue. This shit is stinky. It's the worst. It's legitimately probably the worst trilogy ever made. 10 out of 100, really bad. I love these movies in the sense that I love hating them so much. I just don't. And the thing is, I don't like the first one and I don't like the second. And I know people like those. I can't imagine anyone who's a huge fan of the first one can even like lie and say they like these.
It spits in the face of it.
Right. Exactly. Like I don't like the first, but like I get it. I get it. Right. This is like, I can't imagine anyone lying to me being like, nah, you know what? This is right in line with the first, baby. I love Dollface. This shit sucks.
doll.
That shit stinks. We'll talk about kind of like the plot and where it goes in the twist, because I'll tell you where I thought it was going. I don't know. Clemmer, what did you give it?
Yeah, it's a 14 for me. There's no plot. There's no lore. There's no anything. It's nothing. There's no human element. You don't care about anybody involved in this movie. I've seen now three of these movies. I have yet to care at all about a single character. I don't care if they live. I don't care if they die. I don't care what happens. I just don't care. By the way, this is not the worst one, Jeff. I gotta argue that one. I mean, this is a horror movie. Don't get me wrong. The second one, an entire hospital gets murdered. Nobody cares. And this town is not that big. And then you also have the CGI boar from the second one, which is one of the worst things I saw in all of movies last year. This did not have the CGI boar. This is an atrocious movie. I thought this was over. The fact that you told me it's a fourth, I'm actually kind of shook. I'm like genuinely upset. I do not want to go see a fourth one. No one wants these movies. These movies do terrible box office wise. They're obviously savaged by critics. Nobody likes these movies. Nobody wants these. They should not exist. This is the worst. These Strangers movies are the worst things about movies in the last 3 years. Because they come out every year and they're always horrible. This is the worst thing about cinema since 2024.
This is a bastardized movie franchise. I think I agree with you. I'm pretty much in line with Clemmer. I'm at like a 15 out of 100. I actually dislike it for different reasons, though. I wouldn't say a fan of the original movie, but I enjoy the original, because like there is a legitimate part of like you feel terror from it, because there's a level of like this could happen to me, like someone could just break into my house and fucking, if they have like the numbers, whatever, tie you up and shit, and it's scary. It's basic, it's cold, it's unforgiving, and there's no lore really to it, really, in the first one, from what I remember. It's kind of just like, it's not like Freddy and Jason and Michael Myers, where it's like we need to build up this character, we need to give you all these like backstories and all this stuff. It's like not really like that. It's kind of just like, this just happens right now, and you don't need to know a lot of backstory. It just happens to you. And that is way scarier to me than a lore dump of, you know, Freddy, Jason, whatever. But now it's basically like The Hills of Eyes. Like, it's like flanderized to the point of almost being like comedic. Like, now this guy is related to this guy. You got to call back to this person. You got to go to this thing, to that thing. And I think it just kind of lost what made it that first one sort of special. There's no fear. There's no dread. There's no, like, just everything, like, when you're making a new version of it, right? If you want to make it more of this, like, low quality slasher budgety thing, like, it also, the gory slasher stuff also sucks. It's like, you transitioned it from being like this, like, I would say, maybe grittier is the wrong word, but more realistic and more, like, basic horror movie into, like, this sort of gory slasher, stupid teen movie thing. Like, both parts of this suck. So, really not a fan of this. I don't see how you do a fourth one based on how they ended this one. And I would say, hopefully that there is, I just hope there's not a fourth one, because this is a good, they ended as definitively as it could. Like Clemmer was saying, they're not doing well. I don't think people really like these. I don't think there's a market for it. And it annoys me. Not every horror franchise needs to be, or horror movie or interesting horror idea needs to be turned into a franchise. And it just seems like that's what they all do because they make money. So it sucks, but it is what it is.
Yeah, not only just, and I feel like this is systemic throughout the industry of, we want to give something a prequel and explain it. And I'll jump off from there. I like the first one. And
wait,
I
hold on, hold on. You have liking... to first explain how you had to give two chances to see this movie.
Yeah. Oh, I don't want to turn people away. This is not a common experience. I actually, and people complain about like rowdy theater goers all the time. I have been lucky in the years that I've been here in the city and really have never experienced that until last night at my showing of The Strangers, where me and seven other people sat there waiting for the movie to start. And a gentleman about a row behind me decided to hop on FaceTime and start yelling about killing someone on the phone via FaceTime.
Same theater
and
I watched the movie with, somebody had a chainsaw on their lap the entire time. So yeah, I've had experience.
This is the AMC
there.
Times Square. Yeah, Times Square AMC. Yeah, the Empire, yeah. Which I actually
would
defend,
this be the worst movie of all time to have to like fend for your life while watching? I mean, this is like.
Yeah, that was the other thing. No, I just like was like, I can't do this movie. With this
is the best movie to have that happen, because I don't care how it ends. Like, all right, like if this is my time, at least I'm not going to miss the ending of a great movie.
Yeah, oh, so that happened. I just like got up and left. I actually went to the bathroom first and like hoped that he would chill out, and then I came back. He was off the phone, and then he jumped back on the phone and started hitting the seat in front of him. And so everyone just like, once he started hitting the seat, everyone just stood up and just walked out of the theater. So yeah, I did do it this morning. But I haven't seen the chapter one and chapter two, but I liked the first one growing up because, like Kinjak said, there's not a lot of lore attached to it. And I think that's like really the premise of the movie is that this can happen to anyone. It's a complete random act of violence. Like that is the selling point. That's what makes it so scary. So prequelizing it and trying to explain it all away was never a hook for me. So I just was like checked out on these. And then I heard they were terrible. So I was never going to watch these until we started this podcast. And of course, we have to review these things now. So I watched chapter three. God damn, I wish I didn't. Jeff, you said this is a bore. I don't even think calling it boring or a slog does it justice. So much of this movie is someone saying something, staring right into the camera, waiting 5 seconds for them to cut back to the other person. Another person mumbles one sentence, stares back into the camera for 5 seconds, and then it does that for about 3 minutes at a time. Terrible. Terribly edited. Awful writing. Bad acting. I guess it looks kind of good in spots. I'll give it that. Like, there's a lot of on-location stuff, but
it looks like a real movie, which it does kind of make it crazy how bad it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I was like, is this like a Tubi movie? But like, even a Tubi movie is like entertaining and it's like dumbness. This is just fucking boring, and I really don't think boring gives it justice. Like, really, really just a slog to sit through. So I'm at a 10.
So yeah, we all hate it. I'd say it's probably the lowest we've rated a movie collectively all year. I know you guys had the other one really low, but I guess I fucked that up because I didn't have it quite as low. But this is low, like consistent, like teens to almost below that. Yeah. So we are going to spoil it now because I feel like there's some things to spoil. I mean, actually, before I spoil it, let me just kind of piggyback off what Gooch just said too, and what you're getting at, Ken Jack, what we kind of all said here. Like the irony in this being called The Strangers and being this mysterious, like their mass, you don't know who it is. And like, oh, that's the terrifying thing for them to like, for this to be like a thing that's just an over explanation fest for three movies. It's just like, it just ruins all of any potential fun and interest and intrigue. So yeah, quite the dud. So,
but it also, like Jeff, it tries to explain what's happening, but it really doesn't give an explanation.
That's true. That's also fair.
Killing for killing's sake. Okay, but like, you go through all this trouble showing flashbacks to when they were like 9 years old. But all that leads to really no explanation at all.
It also, you want to talk about completely missing the point. It opens with a textbook definition of serial killer and finishes with the word strangers as a stylistic choice. But the strangers in the definition is referring to the victims. Which is not what the premise of this horror franchise is. The strangers are the killers.
No. Right.
Yeah.
Just right off the bat, missing the fucking point.
Just so stupid.
So let's spoil it. So this was my thing. So I'm reading more about it too. They want to make more Strangers movies, so maybe it won't be a four. But I know that a fourth was discussed. So I thought all along she was gonna like take up the mantle, right? Like, which of the 90s Saw movies isn't there like a bait and switch and which one is that? I don't fucking know.
What, Saw X or the girl takes over for him or whatever?
Yeah. So I thought, I was like, oh, because it ends with kind of a bait and switch. She tells, first off, unbelievable reveal. Unbelievable that Gregory, played by Gabriel Brasso, is the Scarecrow. Whoever would have saw that? Ooh, the really strange, weird guy who is like creepy and ominous is the bit. No fucking way. What a reveal.
He's also huge. He's also a giant man. He's the only giant man in town. Who else could it be?
He's the only man who has to like duck under a doorway in town. Like, nobody else could be the Scarecrow in this town.
Literally nobody else. Mm-hmm.
Which again, that's the point. It's like, okay, well, this is not like, this defeats the fucking purpose. So she says she's in love with him. That's like kind of, she like lures him in to kill him, and she kills him. He is dead. He's dead at the end of the movie. So I don't know what more they could do, but I thought, oh, she's gonna take up the mantle, and that was kind of like they're trying to pull you in with that a little bit. But I would have never believed it had I not come in with the idea that there might be a fourth movie. It's bad. I mean, this is actually like a fairly impressive tour de force of showing what not to do. Like, it kind of checks every box of how to not do a horror franchise. Like, it's pretty impressive, honestly, that it manages to hit every cliche of what you would want a horror franchise to avoid doing that you might like or might enjoy or might see intrigue, and just go down like this path of Jesus Christ. Like, I almost give The Purge credit for, they're not good, like they stink, but they always try something very different, right? Like the election year one, they have the one like the West or something. Like, at least they like take an interesting concept and they swing a little different, right? They try a little something different. It doesn't fucking work, but like, that's fine. This is like, oh my God, the dude just like the same fucking thing three times in a row, and they do it worse and worse. This is a baffling franchise. It's unbelievable.
There's just no appetite for those masks. There's no appetite for them as like villains. They're not interesting. Like, if you wanted to make this a continuous franchise and make it like an anthology of like break-ins, or an anthology of like scary crimes, like the Uber driver. Remember the Uber driver movie with like Joe Keery that was weirdly kind of good? Like, doing shit like that. Like, if you do more movies in that sort of space where it's like, this is a real life thing that could happen to you, and you don't need to involve these weird fucking doll face pinup girl, whatever, all that crap. You could just like make it something more grounded and more actually scary. It doesn't need to be turned into like this fucking entertainment slot machine. Like, I don't get that at all. If I was like a creative choice, and they filmed these all like back to back, right? Like, this was like a very cohesive vision.
Correct.
Like, we need to make three movies out of this.
I would imagine that's the only way these last two were released. Because the first one flopped on arrival too, right? Like, there was no real success.
The first one did the
best
of all of them, and all of them did poorly. They did. My understanding was they filmed all three of these, like in one shoot, like it was all back to back to back.
I wonder if X or Pearl influenced that at all. They're like, oh well, look what happened here. Maybe we could do it too. And it's like, nope.
Yeah. But even those, how those are so different, all three of those. And like, unfortunately, Maxine didn't hit like the first two. But like, another example, like those three movies are unbelievably different. Like, they all have different vibes, different style. It's like, this is to do this three times in a row, 3 years in a row, is that's fucking lunacy. That is like, that's like insanity.
I completely forgot Gabriel Basso is also in Pearl. He's in, also in X.
This is one of those franchises where, like, look, I know I love Marvel stuff and, like, whatever. Like, I'm a fan of it, so I'm a little biased. But this is one of those ones where it's like, when you hear people, and I get the difference. I know that Marvel and those things dominate screens, but it's like, this is like these are the real problems. Like, no, like, you want to talk about, like, franchising things? Like, this is the fucking problem. Like, this is, like, I know it doesn't take up the screens and stuff, but, like, these are the things that fucking stink. Like, really fucking stink. That they're funded by studios for three consecutive years, and, oh, my God, it's like, ass.
Yeah. It's something the audience is doing, almost, where it's like, we know you have to watch something around this time of year, and we know if you put any horror movie out, the teens are going to go and watch it. And being bad enough where that doesn't happen means you really suck. Really bad.
Yeah, it's like Lionsgate. Like, I know this movie probably doesn't cost much to make. Give that money to someone else. Give it to a young creator. Just do something interesting with it. Like, that's because, like, these are the like, that's the thing. It's like, yes, again, does this cost $1 zillion to make, like a Marvel or a DC or a certain? No, but it's like, go look at Iron Lung, right? I'm like, that made a lot of money. It was self-funded. Why not take this little bit of money that you just put here and give it to somebody unique or interesting or young or different, and see if you can turn a profit. Like this isn't gonna. It's not gonna make. It's not gonna do anything. It's a flop. So these are things. It's like, damn. Like, this, refocus your fucking priorities here.
That's exactly right, Jeff. And the Iron Lung is a perfect comp. Look how much money that's making off a $3 million budget. It's like 10xing already. And it's also just like a different creative movie. We'll talk about it. And there's goods and bads with the movie for sure. But at least it's unique, and at least it's giving something different. This, we hated this movie in October, Jeff. Like, we knew this, we hated the first one. Like, we knew this was going to be bad, and it's exactly what you'd expect. And what did Lionsgate expect in this? Like, what was the plan? None of that makes any sense.
I don't understand how this doesn't end up on a streamer. Like, how did these two not end up getting sold off to just hit streaming day one?
Poor fucking Kevin Costner trying to make chapter 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8 of Horizon. He just can't get him done. selling horse after horse, just like
fucking poor guy
hawking like bales of hay downtown in Wyoming. Like, come on, I'm just trying to fund this movie. Come on. Yeah, not great. Not great. We hated this fucking movie. So that's that. Okay, review time for Solo Mio, the next movie in the Angels Studio cinematic universe. There's a good, no spoilers, but when Jesus walks out of the portal at the end of this movie to shake Kevin James' hand, it's pretty sick. It's pretty cool. Come with me, Kevin. Solo Mio, Matt, a man whose dreams of a, by the way, I can't believe Diane Warren doesn't have a song in this movie. This seemed like, right, this was the vehicle right here. Matt, a man whose dreams of a picturesque Italian wedding are shattered when his fiancée leaves him at the altar, embarks on his planned honeymoon across Italy alone, immersing himself in the country's vibrant culture, food, and beauty. 96 minutes long from the Kinane brothers. Haven't really done much. Kevin James, Allison Hannigan, Nicole Grimato, Kim Coates. Kevin James, you may not know this movie, but there's a high chance you've seen the marketing for this movie.
Interesting.
There was a viral TikTok and Instagram called Matt the Art Teacher. Is that what it was?
Oh, yeah.
Something like that, where it's Kevin James. People are like, oh, this art teacher looks like Kevin James. And it was kind of like enjoyable and fun and viral. And that is the big thing behind this movie. $7.5 million opening domestically. 78-95% split Rotten Tomatoes. IMDb 7.7. Metacritic 38, which that was really fucking low. I was kind of shocked by that. 3.2 on Letterboxd. What did you think, Ken Jack, of Solo Mio from your fellow Long Island boy, Kevin James?
Yeah, I think I was the first one of us to see this. And I was very excited, I would say, to be like, report back to you guys and be like, oh, man, Solo Mio, we're going to have fun trashing this one. Because you hear Kevin James and an Angel Studios rom-com and your expectations just go down. It is what it is. That's not a combination that seems like it should work on almost any level. And I think that's earned. But this movie blew up those expectations and was a damn fun time. I think what really blew me away about this is that it is shot really well. It has good music and it earns everything. Like, it plays the hits that a lot of rom-coms have. But at the same time, I was trying to think of an analogy. Like, they learn the music. They're not lip syncing, right? Like, they earn everything that you get in this movie. There's no shortcuts. It's also not trying to be the sort of like loud funny that Kevin James is, you know what I mean? It's very much more like quiet funny, which I think fits the tone way better. It was like a really delightful movie that I think is super easy to recommend to almost anybody. And I'm still right now, as we sit here, shocked that I enjoyed this movie as much as I did based off of everything on paper. I liked it. I liked the side characters they had in it. I love the shots. I love our guest appearances. We'll leave it at that for now. And I love the cinematography. Like, you're looking through the countryside of Italy and Rome, and it's beautiful and on location. And like, they're speaking in an actual, they're like language and subtitles. Like, it was a fucking great time. And I cannot believe it still. And I'm actually still, because I don't know how well you guys felt about it, I'm very curious to see what you guys think. I ended up on a 78 out of 100 on Solo Mio.
Clemmer, you agree?
I do. I really like this movie. This is a very kind, sweet movie. Has a big heart. Like Kendrick said, earns kind of everything it presents. And I give Kevin James a ton of credit. He never plays it like big and broad for laughs. Like, not a lot like Paul Blart. Like, none of that bullshit. It's like a genuine human being that you would meet. That's the next thing, is a lot of these characters were genuine people you'd meet, or the side characters were odd and eccentric, but like in a like fun way. And like, they don't. It's even to the point like where they're older, a lot of this cast is older, and they kind of even bring that up. They don't try to hide it by acting or like saying they're younger than they are. Everyone just, it feels very earnest and real and heartfelt, and I really enjoyed it. This is the kind of movies Angel Studios should be making. Jeff, you did say that when he meets Jesus, it's pretty cool. He does meet Jesus in the movie. I think Jonathan Rumi is the guy. He plays one of the friends. He plays the friend, the therapist relationship, the guy there. He played Jesus in the Chosen movies that came out on Amazon. So you do have him meet Jesus. I like this a lot. I give this a 73 out of 100. And it's a movie I recommend for sure. It's a nice thing, too. It's like you can... It's what happens. He gets left at the altar. That is kind of overly dramatic and kind of silly. It doesn't really happen too much in the real world. But just being alone is something I think everyone can relate to and understand. Everyone's been alone at some point in their lives, and I think it does a really good job showing that without kind of going overboard. I don't know. I really like this. Really, really nice movie. Please make more of this in your studios. Make less weird stuff.
I Gooch, you go next, but I just want to know, there were times where, like, this maybe is unfair of me with Kevin James, but like he'd be sitting down on like the steps or something. It's like a nice tender moment. And I did expect him to like stand up and like let out like a squeak fart or something. And be like, oops, like that. You just expect that from Kevin. There is none of that. Like it is like they don't do any of that thing, which was good. Gooch, do you agree?
Yeah, we could have used a lot more of that. By the way, you brought up the Kinane brothers, which I think is also you need to add that in there when we're talking about Angel Studios rom-com. They've made one other thing with Kevin James, Home Team. We all loved it, remember?
Oh, yes.
It's also not just two guys. It is Charles Kinane and Daniel Kinane, the directors, Patrick Kinane and John Kinane, the writers and producers, Patrick and John Kinane are the writers. Where is it? There's eight Kinanes in here. Pete Kinane, the
That's
editor.
Too many.
There's seven brothers. There's seven brothers. There's seven brothers behind the camera.
They're all working together. It's great.
But like you guys said, this did really surprise me. Like it really did. And I think On Location is the big takeaway here. On Location. We are starved for On Location rom-coms. Makes such a big difference. Mm-hmm. And I liked a rom-com that came out earlier this year, which was People We Meet on Vacation. That had so much more to do with the leads. It would have ascended into the stratosphere if they were actually on location in their little European vacations. But it was, I think, all shot in New Orleans, and it made such it brings it down so much. Because here, I mean, I love Rome. Amo Roma. Beautiful, beautiful seeing Kevin James just walk through, you know, the Trastevere and all the beautiful sights. It's just gorgeous. So I can put a lot of my complaints with, I think it misses some emotional beats, especially towards the beginning. Really anything with his wife. I think gets a little brushed aside and kind of just moved over kind of quickly. But once we get past that, the stuff with the friends on vacation, that's great. What's his name? The guy with the long hair, not Jesus.
Julian.
Damn. Yeah. Julian. Kim Coates. Sorry.
Kim Coates. Yeah.
He was great as the friend, his Italian love interest, Gia, fantastic. And then that cameo. Ooh, two cameos, but great cameo. 60 out of 100. I like this quite a bit. It's not like Hitch level for me if we're doing Kevin James rom-coms, but it's a lot closer than I thought it would have been. A whole lot closer.
Yeah, I'm kind of right up there with everyone else. This is a shock. I gave it a 72 out of 100. I quite enjoyed it. Really tender performance from Kevin James. I thought the supporting cast is fantastic in this too. There's just something about seeing a comedic actor like kind of put aside like the classic tropes that you're used to seeing them do and turn in like a really nice soft performance, but not have to like kind of get real. Like there's still funny moments in it. Like there's still that Kevin James charm that you know people enjoy, whether it be, you know, the movies, the Hitches, maybe if you're a Grown Ups fan, I guess, or the King of Queens. And again, the supporting cast, excellent, like really good. There's a lot of movies like this. I know I'm not saying genre of guy left at altar in Europe, but like, you know, where it's like someone's in like a fish out of water type thing, where so often like the characters around them are cliche and like they're not, like they're enjoyable. You can kind of connect with them. It's nice, you know, some tearjerker moments, some funny moments. It's definitely like predictable and cliche, but that's okay. That's, you know, that's fine. Not everything has to be transcendent on, you know, the genre or cult. Like sometimes it's okay just to kind of fall in line, especially because nowadays we don't get things like this, right? Like this, that's more of a problem for me. This is like 2003 and this is just one of the other solo Mios released but like we don't get movies like this really anymore. They don't try to make things like this. Credit to what you said, Gooch, like People We Meet on Vacation was kind of around here for me as well, and it's like, why not take more chances on things like this that are simple, that are nice? You know, it's not crushing the box office, but doing okay. And like Gooch and like Clemmer said, like this, you know, there's been a couple Angel Studio things I've liked, some that have been terrible, but like why not do something like this? You know, it doesn't always have to lean heavily into their, like, the whole religious, you know, I know they have to be, have their movies approved by the Angel Guild.
2 million members. About.
Yeah. but no, this is very enjoyable. Like really good Kevin James, where you're like, oh, like more of this, like definitely more of this. Yeah. So I had a good time with this. Like, absolutely.
I want to get her name right. Nicole Grimardo. She played Gia, the love interest.
Really good.
They had such a great chemistry. She was fantastic. And you're right, Jeff. The general movie is, like, I guess, predictable of sorts. But there's things that happen in the movie and people's reactions to the movie that are not predictable. Like, you have... I think they do a really good job with, like, throwing surprises at you left and right. Whether it be casting choices, whether it be kind of, like, just funny little moments that happen that are not predictable. And because of that... Yeah, it's a rom-com, but yet there's the creative new elements to it. I don't know. I walked away, like, feeling good and happy, and, like, it was time well spent.
Mm-hmm. You have a good point, too, about it being Kevin James playing, like, a normal guy that you would meet, which I feel like is kind of... Because this movie, you make this, like, 5 years ago, it's starring, like, Josh Lucas, and it's starring, like, hot young people, you know what I mean? Like, younger people, and, like, that you do not relate to, and you do not see yourself as being one of these people. And I think, like, them all being older... human looking people, actors, you know what I mean? Like, same with Allison mm-hmm. Hannigan, great example, was a great addition to this. I think that just gives you a different level of empathy to it, where you feel like you're on vacation with these people.
Yes.
Which I enjoyed a lot more than if it was like, you know, what was the movie, When in Rome, with Josh Duhamel? Was that it? That did, like, yeah, almost the same thing.
Kristen Bell.
Yeah, and it just does not resonate whatsoever. In this case, it does. And I actually think there's definitely a lot of cliches in this. I think the ending was very not cliche. I did not see the actual ending.
That's fair.
Coming. I would say, like, most of the other beats, yes, definitely, for sure. But the actual ending notes, like, with a letter and all that stuff, I did not see coming, and I enjoyed that quite a bit.
Yeah, I don't know if this is going to be a trend now, because now that's a big streamer, People We Meet on Vacation. This is Angel Studios, a studio that you wouldn't, that's had success, that you wouldn't typically expect something like this from. Maybe this Correct. Is a trend. Maybe we see more of this.
Just like adult-led rom-coms that, like, are made on a fairly thin budget, but are creative enough and do well. Yeah. Just doing well. Like, this is going to make a profit.
Hollywood, remembering that rom-coms and book adaptations work and make money. That's the theme of the next 5 years, I think.
Yeah, the book adaptations especially.
Like, real human being characters.
Yeah.
Like, there's not, like, that's a good thing.
Kevin James is definitely... I will say, if you look at the things that he's in a lot of bad movies, but, like, I quite often don't find him to be the problem. Like, he is, like, even, like I don't like Paul Blart Mall Cop, but, like, I kind of like Paul Blart, like, the character. Like, I don't know, like, I'm kind of, he was in that movie that we saw last year. I know, Kenjack, you definitely watched it, Playdate, with Alan Rich. Like, and he was, like,
he was good in that.
Was fun in that, like. There's enough stuff that he's been in that I'm like, you mentioned played Sean Payton in Home Team, one of the all-time castings.
He always does exactly what he's hired to do. Like, it is as never like he's a bad fit. He's why this isn't working. Like, no, he's doing exactly what he's supposed to do. The movie around him maybe isn't right, and, like, the story isn't right, but, like, he's doing the right thing.
He's also, like, believable as a love interest, which
I
feel like has been underutilized throughout his career. Because you think, I think this is the, I'm looking through, is this the second rom-com he's done ever? Like, pure rom-com? I think so.
Yeah.
And he just has a lovability about him. And he's handsome. Like, he's big, but he's a handsome guy. So he fits in nicely here. Gia is a beautiful woman in this movie, but at no point was I like, this doesn't make any sense. I will say, what an upgrade off the wife. Now you marry, I mean, he's marrying an Italian, this Italian coffee shop owner.
That's the gorgeous niece of Andrea Bocelli.
I mean, talk about failing
great,
upwards.
Great cameo, by
Jesus.
The way.
Great cameo.
He was good.
The legend.
I love the reveal. It's so funny. He's like, "Are you with me a really big fan?" When he looks at the picture on that, that's very funny.
And they were smart with it. They did not overuse that. Like, they played it exactly right. I think they could have overdone that.
Mm-hmm. And it worked for the story because he had to get up and sing, and then he gets to sing with Andrea Bocelli, like,
yeah,
it worked.
And that was a beautiful message too, just like don't be afraid to try things, you know what I mean, like, that whatever it is that what she said to him, like, that was a very nice message from her to him as well.
Yeah.
I think we all enjoyed it. We're all kind of consistent across the board on Solo Mio as well. I think definitely go to the theater and check this out if you're a rom-com part. Like, this is
for sure,
absolutely check it out. Absolutely.
Especially with Valentine's Day. I know we got Wuthering Heights, but if you can't get, if you're sold out there, like, or even if you're not, go see movie on Friday. Go see.
Or maybe you're not quite horny enough for Wuthering Heights. Maybe you're like, hey, I want to tone it down just a little bit. Maybe that's it. I don't know.
Great thing.
Yeah.
A great substitute.
So yeah, definitely check out Solo Mio. A good time at the movies. Let's talk about the moment. Charlie XCX's movie. The faux satirical documentary starring Charlie XCX is a fictionalized version of herself during the peak of her Bratz summer fame. The film follows her navigating intense industry pressure, corporate brand deals, and the psychological toll of fame while preparing for an arena tour, hour and 43 minutes long. Aidan Zamiri is the director, Charlie XCX, Rosanna Arquette, Alexander Skarsgård, awesome as always, Kate Berlant, 2.2 million opening domestically. It's just hit wide this past weekend. 93-88% split around tomatoes, 6.5 IMDb, Metacritic 52, Letterboxd 3.4. Gooch, I know you saw it first. You and I talked about it briefly last week, but expand on it because I know you definitely really liked this movie.
Yeah, I liked it a lot. It was kind of same thing with Solo Mio, a bit shocked on what it ended up being because going in, I brought this up last week, the marketing, I think, did this a disservice in making it seem like a Spinal Tap kind of descendant. And it would be a very joke-a-minute mockumentary. And it's just not that at all. It is still mockumentary style, but it's so much more introspective in a way that I did not expect from Charlie XCX. Like, she is pretty self-critical throughout this movie. And through that is able to really look at, like, what is... And because we deal in this a lot with, like, ad deals and just... things of that nature, like 21st century celebrity and influence has kind of just melded into one. The way she attacked it, I found to be very revealing and very insightful. And I loved it, to be honest, that portion of it. The Alexander Skarsgård thing, I think people are a little mixed on it. I'm actually on the negative side of things for that, because I think when it does try to inject comedy, that's where it misses a little bit. It's whiffing on the comedy and the spots that it does try to have it. It has a few cameos that some work, some don't. One really works for me. But all in all, like I said, this is just a much smarter movie than I was really ever expecting and kind of one that I already want to revisit. Yeah, I'm not a Charlie XCX fan, by the way. I should have led with that. Like, don't ever listen to her music. Really, it's just not my type of music. But now I'm kind of interested to dive into it.
Yeah, it's. I'll just go quick because I agree with what Gooch said. We kind of talked about it more last week, so we'll hear what Clemmer and Kendrick have to say. I gave it a 79. I really enjoyed it, like really enjoyed it. It's overbaked for sure. Like if I'm going to hit some flaws with it, like it definitely like it tries a little too much. But like at the same time, I don't want to hate on it too much for that because I like the swings that it takes. Like it definitely tries to do a lot of. It tries to cover a lot of bases and not everything works, but it's a very unique satirical. It's a great attempt at a music biopic and being different, a genre which is the most overplayed genre ever. We're going to talk about a trailer for a movie coming out, the Michael Jackson movie. It's going to make $1 trillion, but like I know Clemmer hates the Cradle of the Grave stuff, which a lot of people do, but like this is a very different take on a music biopic. It's obviously satirical and it's like fake, but it's still based in some reality, right? With like her summer and kind of her fame and hype. And Skarsgård's awesome. Like, I think they just do, and she's great too. She's really good in her role. And she's also a huge movie buff, which I think like, I hate factoring that into my score, but she's very well known to have a Letterboxd and very active on it. And I like that she's someone who's a movie person and made a movie. And instead of like a music documentary or a biopic that's like simple and bland and did something different and unique and exaggerated and cool. That's not like a factor into my score, but that is awesome. Like that's very cool to see. And I would have appreciated it even if I didn't like the movie, but I did like it. Kenjack, what'd you think?
I don't think I like this as much as you guys did. I'm around like a 55 out of 100. I just think it's a not good remake of Popstar. Basically, like it's almost hits all the same beats as the movie Popstar, except not as consistently. And I think it's just kind of greedy. It's like, and you mentioned like trying to do too much. Like, I just, what I mean by that is like, I think tonally it hurts what they're going for. Like the comedy, like you were saying, the comedy undercuts the drama undercuts the comedy. And it almost feels at points like almost like a character reel, not for Charlie XCX, who's very good in this. Like, she is like watching this, like, and if you didn't know she was a singer, like, I would just assume she's a good actor. Like, you know what I mean? Like, she was very good.
But it felt like a character, like almost like a reel for maybe the director, where it's like, hey, look, I can do all these different things. I can do all these different things, but like everything did not complement each other. Like, I feel like this, if you wanted to do this like a satirical drama, I think that those parts, like you were saying, Gooch, I think if you wanted to do that, great. If you wanted to do a pure, more of a comedy, great. Like, I just think everything in here did not meld really. And I think the annoying part is that the individual components work. Charlie, again, really solid. I think Scar, like if you put him in the bubble, like the Skarsgård scenes are very funny. Like every time he's on screen, it's like if you were to take it out of the context of what's happening, they are good, but it's just they are not connecting to what's going on in the rest of this movie. And I think when you're just constantly bouncing all over the place, this very like schizophrenic editing did not help at all my enjoyment of it whatsoever. I think she was really, again, she is really good, and I would like to see her in more stuff. I did not connect with this really at all. And I'm not a fan of Charlie XCX either. Like, I'm not to say, like, oh, I hate her music. Like, I just am not, like, an active seeker of Charlie XCX. But I think it's just, this was not, it was all over the place. It was just really, really all over the place. Did not connect. I would rather watch, like, just Popstar do the same thing, except way better than watch this again.
That's fair. I have no problem with that, with those takes. Because, like I said, I do think it's a little overdone in spots for sure. Like kind of doing a lot, right?
I'm not entirely against the comparison, but can you go into that for the pop star comparison a little bit more?
Yeah, you have like the monster huge person that just made their big break into the music sphere, and they have to recompense with like a new album coming out against the ad machine that's fucking them over. Okay. Because they need to ingratiate all these things into their music, and they're losing their artistic value versus their commercial value. They have like studio versus their creative versus their image versus all these things coming into one. It's doing the same things. It's just obviously they're taking a more serious look at it than Popstar was. Popstar was having a little more fun with it than this was.
Yeah, I can see it from that angle. Thanks. Clemmer, did you see it?
I did, and I liked it. I gave this 68. I kind of enjoyed how it was all over the place. It definitely was a mess at times. When I say like structurally, like the drama and the comedy don't always meld together, but sometimes they do. And I really like some of the stuff she was saying. Like, it's interesting. You have the most creative freedom when you're not successful, because no one cares. You make a song, no one's gonna, like, then it's the only time you have creative freedom is when you're not doing well. It's when you do well, you have all this different people trying to get their hands on it, and the better you do, and she finds, the character finds this out, and she probably found it out in real life, when she became, like, a sensation, then everyone wants their hands in the pot. And I think it did a really good job with that. I also liked how it worked with the language, like Alexander Skarsgård. You have a whole industry of everyone afraid to say no. Like, they'll say, like, different things and try to be nice, and everyone's so afraid of being the asshole that people will just get run over. And I kind of enjoyed how it showed that. I'm not a Charlie XCX fan. I don't dislike her. I don't like her music before this. I'm like, oh, it's just fine to me. But I really liked her in this movie, and I really liked Skarsgård, and I liked some of the things it was doing. And I love, like Jeff said, I love how it was, like, not a traditional biopic. This is someone willing to take big shots. Not all of them hit. But hell, like, this is way better than, like, Hurry Up Tomorrow, which is, like, a bad movie. Like, that movie just sucks. Like, this is an entertaining movie that does a lot, doesn't always land everything, but I don't know. I was entertained for most of it. I mean, it was 68, and I recommend this movie. I liked it.
Yeah, I'll say this, too. I'm also not a huge, like, I do like her music, but I'm not, like, a diehard fan of her music. Like, I wasn't posting Brett Summer memes. I wasn't doing the green album cover with the black text. I wasn't doing that, you know? So I think that's a pretty big testament for the, for dudes who aren't big fans of Charlie XCX. Even Kendrick, like Kendrick didn't like it, like at the level like we did, but like, I think Kendrick, even as a non-fan, is like, you know, it's like interesting swing, right? Interesting take, good try, good effort. So I think like, if you even like her stuff a little bit, like absolutely go check this out if you can find it. I mean, it's opening in more theaters. This is definitely, and again, this is that time of year. This is that type of thing. You know, take the risk. I don't know. And it doesn't always have to be like, it doesn't have to be, you know, a faux documentary. You know, like I'd
rather watch this than Springsteen.
I enjoyed the Pharrell Williams Lego movie. His biopic. Like,
I think if you even have any interest in power and art, you should see this. Because it has a lot to say about those things in a really interesting way. And like you said, Jeff, like, she's willing to be self-critical. So it allows almost like an honesty that you don't typically get in these things.
It is a very honest movie. I saw a couple of reviews, people saying like I would absolutely buy the Brat credit card. Like I would have like that. I would definitely be suckered into that. You, by the way, you know fucking what's his face is watching this going like, yes, Billy McFarland, the Firefest guy, like, yes.
Yeah. I would
love that. There's also I wish one of us was a like massive Charlie fan. Because from what I've read and heard is that there is like stuff under, you know, in the subtext where if you are a fan, it makes or adds enjoyment. It adds a level of like there's some lore behind the character that Alexander Skarsgård is playing. It is more or less a ripoff of like Taylor Swift's concert director. His name is like he does a bunch of concert films, but he's like Taylor's go-to guy. Like apparently that's just like a one for one on that guy. There's a lot of stuff, I think, directed at Taylor Swift in the movie. Good stuff. Also, before we move on, what do you guys think of the Kylie cameo? Crazy.
Very shocking.
Why is that shocking or crazy?
I've never heard her speak.
Oh.
Not one time in my life. Like, I've never expected her to see her on a movie screen, ever.
Yeah. I think she was fine. I didn't have any issue with her. You think it was good or bad?
Yeah, no, I thought she was good. That was my favorite cameo by far.
Yeah, definitely give this a try. Like, I would suggest if you're a fan, like for sure give it a try. But if you're not a fan, I would still say go to the theater and like Clemmer, you said it great. You know, like art, fame, power. Like it's way more. Don't think of it as a Charlie XCX movie. That's probably an unfair way of putting it. Like it's so much more than that. It's like a very different, unique music movie, kind of like, you know, it's actually interesting. It's, we don't get much of this. It's a lot, you know, it's kind of like a movie about making movies, right? Like it's like that, it's that sense, but a music that like that done, which we get all the time, right? We've reviewed movies about movies like three times and I was like two or three months. So you don't get movies about like elements of music that you're not used to seeing, like concerts and like tours and like market, like, you know, usually it's them saying, trying to figure out We Will Rock You in studio and fucking Bohemian Rhapsody. Mm-hmm. Great scene, by the way. Awesome scene. Definitely how it all went down. it came on my feed the other day. I just kind of rolled my eyes. So absolutely give this a try. That's the moment. The satirical Charlie XCX music biopic, which, when I first saw the trailer, I never thought I'd be saying this months later. Like, give it a go. What happens when you lock 18 coworkers in an office for 1 week to compete for $250,000 of cash? This is Surviving Barstool Season 5, presented by Rumble Premium, where each episode releases 3 hours early. So get it ad-free before anybody else, only when you join Rumble Premium. New episodes of Surviving Barstool will be released every Sunday and Wednesday, leading up to the Labor Day finale on September 7th. You can watch Surviving Barstool at 5 p.m. on Rumble Premium and everywhere else at 8 p.m. Eastern. Movie reviews done. Let's talk about there's really not much news. It's really just trailers. There are a couple of interesting trailers to talk about. Let's start out with The Devil Wears Prada 2. This dropped like minutes after we stopped recording last week, by the way. So it's been out for about a week now. Andy returns to Runway as Miranda navigates a new media landscape and Runway's position within it. They reconnect with another former assistant, Emily, who is now the head of a luxury brand that possesses commercial money that could mean Runway's survival. David Frankel, the director, returns. Since doing the first Devil Wears Prada, he's done Marley and Me, Hope Springs, and one of the biggest ass movies of the century, Collateral Beauty. One of the all-time Oscar bait stinkers, Collateral Beauty. Jesus Christ. Meryl Streep, Anne Hathaway, Emily Blunt, Stanley Tucci, all back. Definitely one of the more anticipated movies probably across the board for people this year. This thing's going to make, I think it's going to make a killing. Do we like the first full trailer for Devil Wears Prada 2?
Am I the only one that's just like, it's kind of hard to like even get excited for this, right? Because like I like the original movie. But like this, when I watch this trailer, I'm like, what's the point other than money? And that's what I come up with a lot of like, let's say late sequels now. It's like, if you're doing this for any reason other than just, you know, if you're making like Axel F, Beverly Hills Cop 5 or whatever on Netflix, like, what are you making this for? And that's what I felt watching this. And maybe I'm just not the core audience, but I think that's where I'm landing on it.
I think that's, is anyone here a huge fan of it?
I wouldn't say like huge.
huge fan of Devil Wears Prada.
First one was okay.
Yeah.
I think the first one's like borderline great. I do, but it's also just not for me. So it's not like I'm a huge fan of it, but I get why. I 100% get why it is the phenomenon that it is. It makes sense. It'll make a bunch of money. I'm sure it'll be charming. I mean, Meryl Streep, Anne Hathaway, and Emily Blunt, I guess. It looks a little off, right? I'm not crazy. They shot all this in person, but there is like a weird look to it. Or maybe it's just I'm used to the early 2000s.
Yeah, people are not happy with the way it looks, and they're doing a lot of side-by-side comparisons with the original movie and say it's washed out and doesn't look great. But I've seen some counters to that it looks better than people. I don't know. But that is definitely a concern. What I would say is my thing is, my trust in this is that you have a lot of, like, Anne Hathaway, Emily Blunt returning. Like, there's something to that. That I think there's like a care that they do want this to be good and a follow up to a really good first movie. It's like I trust it a little bit, but yeah, I'm also not falling over. You know, I'm not going to take off my still suit and turn and, you know, put on my fashion clothes to show up for opening night of The Devil Wears Prada 2. You know, I'm not going to wear my Miranda wig, but I'm looking forward to it. The Michael Jackson movie had another full trailer come out. They have a bigger trailer for the Super Bowl. The big thing with this one is that people are starting to realize there's a part two happening, that there's a part one and part two, which is going to be interesting for those who go and don't realize that this is not the full, which you can't tell the full story. And who knows what part two will even be, because obviously the easier story to tell is the part one, the Jackson 5, the early success. And it's not even sure what they'll do with part two. Like, I don't know how much they're going to go into like the other stuff. Because obviously his family is heavily involved. Then any extra thoughts on Michael? I mean, this thing is going to make a fuck ton of money. This thing is going to make so much money.
It's going to make a ton of money. And you say other stuff. I mean, it's allegations of child abuse. Like, I don't know. And that's like not really something I really want to go rush out and see a movie about. Like, about the guy that potentially did that. And, you know, like, I don't know. I'm not thrilled about it. Like, it's going to make a lot of money. It's kind of gross in a way.
It's going to be child abuse in both ones. It's going to be in the first one too. If you have Joe Jackson, you're going to have that in the first one too.
Yeah, we're beating the kids up?
Yeah, beating the shit out of them. Yeah, so you're going to have it in both of them.
Yeah, I don't know how much. Again, the family's heavily involved. I mean, literally Jafar Jax is playing Michael. So I don't know how much we're going to, like, the level of, like, you know, we're getting into the weeds and you know, negative. Like, I don't know how it's going to do. The trailer's done solid online, not like groundbreakingly big, but it's got hype. You're gonna get some people turning heads when they watch Super Bowl today. Like, you're gonna get some olds who haven't seen it, who don't know it's coming out, and they're gonna be watching that game, and that trailer's gonna pop up, and you're gonna have people go, "Whoa!" and they're gonna fucking mark it down on their calendar, and they're gonna be there. This is like a perfect Super Bowl trailer, by the way. This is gonna turn head. They're gonna be people bitching and moaning about, you know, fucking Bad Bunny. Charlie Puth doing the shout out Charlie Puth, great artist, doing the anthem, and then they're gonna see Michael Jackson. Like, that's what we want right there.
I think this is
gonna be the most talked about trailer today. I think for sure.
You might be right, but the olds lived in the era of him being accused of these things.
There is a racial element to this too, and like, not to like dive too much into it, but there is a very clear like split between white America and black America when it comes to the perception of Michael Jackson and his legacy. I mean, the discourse around this is going to be fucking miserable. I would like to focus on
what it
actually
looks like. Man had a very
successful
Broadway show right by my apartment in New York as well for a long time. And
that's true.
And I tell you, it was white and black people walking out of that theater. So I think even with all like the baggage and all the accusation things, like, I mean, there is still it is a massive fan base for Michael Jackson and interest and intrigue in general. And again, making this part one compared to part two, where it's like the Jackson 5, the early stuff, Thriller, like, that is easily the more palatable thing. And that's what's in the trailer. So yeah, I'm excited to see how this one.
I saw it start to bleed into the bad era though, Jeff, in the trailer. Like, you can see like it goes beyond. Now, it might stop there, and that might be the okay place to kind of stop, if you will. Like, it goes beyond Thriller, because we see the Pepsi thing with the fire.
Sure.
It goes up to like Bad, because it looks like he's wearing the same hairstyle he had for Bad. But like you said,
I was reading something, and I don't know if it's true. This is just speculation. Could be dead wrong. Just speculation. This is not my scoop. Somebody said that they think that there's some stuff in the first trailer that is in part two.
Oh.
Which is interesting. Okay. So I don't know if that's true. I'm only regurgitating what I've read. And I did read that. I was like, if you told me that was true, I wouldn't be that shocked by it. Like I feel like I wouldn't be too blown away by that. So that's that one. Then the last one, this is the interesting one. The drama from A24, from director Christopher Borgli. Days before their wedding, a couple's relationship is shaken when one partner discovers unsettling truths about the other. Zendaya and Robert Pattinson comes out April 3rd. So I'm pretty sure people know what the twist is. I don't want to say it because I don't want to spoil it. Okay, so we won't say it then.
I've been avoiding
it. Gooch, I feel like you know about this as well. I think we've talked about this very briefly, but it's we won't say what the twist is, but people have debated the twist is it's like a fucked movie, right?
Yeah, it's strange that they don't include any kind of tease towards this twist in the trailer, because I think
they legitimately skip over because they show the moment I believe is the twist reveal in the movie, but they skip over and they don't show the line. So it's almost like you're watching the trailer and something got cut out. It's mysterious. You don't know what, but I've heard what it apparently is. It is nuts. It's like, wow. All right.
But that, I think that is like got that leak of what the twist is has me way more interested to see the movie than this trailer does. Cause the trailer makes it seem like a really fucking boring, pointless movie without like, they're just staring at each other in the trailer. Like, oh my God, I can't believe like he's got this face that like, oh my God, which makes more sense when you know the twist, but without knowing the twist, I don't know if this trailer is like gonna hook people in.
I'll see anything with the two of them at this point. She's fucking awesome. He's incredible. So
they're in three movies together this year.
Yeah, that is pretty crazy. There is a very funny quote about Dune. Did you read the quote about him and her talking about Dune?
Such a goofball. He was like,
he really is. Like, he's like
what do you say? It's like Dune.
Yeah, what did they say? Hold on, I should have pulled it up. The quote is pretty funny. He said, the first scene we shot together out in the desert, I'm like, oh, we're like in Dune. And Zendaya's like, yep, we're in a Dune movie. It's like, what an electric retelling of the story from Robert Pattinson. We'll probably be talking about Dune in a little bit. What do people see? Kenjack, you see anything? Kenjack, I know, what do you think about the Fallout finale, Kenjack? A season which I think you've been kind of ahead of the curve a little bit, because I kind of fell closer to where you were as the season wrapped.
Yeah, it's nothing to do with necessarily the finale itself. I wasn't a huge fan of this season at all. I think it was like you need in season loops to be open and closed when you're doing any season of television. You can't have an entire season of TV just be a stepping stone for another season, and that's what it felt like this entire season was. It's like, oh well, we're setting up stuff to get ready to go crazy in season three. That's where the real stuff's going to happen. And like, I wasn't a huge fan of how they wrapped this one up. But it's all relative, right? Because like, this is still, I would consider, one of the best video game adaptations ever made, especially if you're including season one as well. It's still good. It's just, season one is up here. It's like, holy shit, they figured it out. They know what to do. Jonathan Nolan's got it. And then this felt more like, and I'm sure as you can remember, Jonathan Nolan Westworld, like season three, where it's like, I'm a little bit lost here. Like, I created a monster and I'm not sure how to keep this going.
Too much.
All over the place.
Right, like it's just like there are so many flashbacks and like flashbacks interwoven with another scene and another character, and it's just a lot.
There's like 10 characters in different locations, all different locations. It's crazy,
right? And I wouldn't even say it doesn't work, because it does and it makes sense, but it's a little exhausting.
Yeah,
like you're just like, ugh, God,
especially only in 8 episodes, you just don't have enough time to do all that.
Yeah. I didn't have any issue how it ended and stuff like that, but yeah, this definitely disappointing is probably the best way to put it. Like, definitely disappointing.
Yeah, but it's relative. Again, like, I'd rather watch this than fucking half the other video game adaptations I make, than Return to Silent Hill. I'd rather watch this 5,000 times full season worth than ever watch Return to Silent Hill again.
Let me be abundantly clear. Strangers Chapter 3 was not worse than Return to Silent Hill. Need to make that very clear.
Very clear. I completely agree, Jeff.
I can't believe that was made.
It's close.
Where did that money go?
I don't know if it's that close, Jeff. There's a level of Return to Silent Hill.
Yeah, but when you have something rated to 10, you can only go so much lower than that.
I know, but there's still a level. Like, in the Lost Lands, Return to Silent Hill are like here.
They had like $30 million. How did it look like that? It makes no. I still makes no sense to me. Oh, Night of the Seven Kings is fucking awesome. Like Game of Thrones has never been more back than it is right now. It is such like a different, cool look into the Game of Thrones universe, which I think is such an interesting swing because I can't imagine how many times a successful television show has had a spinoff, which was tonally, I would say, this different. A lot of people try to say like Breaking Bad to Better Call Saul. I don't think that they were like humongously different or anything like that. I think this is like a pretty big swing as far as like going into more comedic elements of it, and it's awesome. And the cast is great, top to bottom. The runtime, I think, is everyone gets kind of like, oh, it's only 30 minutes versus Thrones being like an hour. I think it's good. It's better to have quality over quantity in minutes. And this is like a short 70-page story anyway. It's like, yeah, I think they're hitting their notes. Really, really, really digging it. It's way better so far to me than House of the Dragon has been. Really, really enjoying it.
I mean, to be fair, Kinjak, House of the Dragon is also like 3 pages in the book, right? It's something
true.
Like that.
Extended it's out. Not into, a lot.
But it, jumping off from you, I brought up before, it took me a second to like really settle in with the tonal shift of Night of the Seven Kingdoms. Comedically speaking, like in Westeros, that just like kind of threw me through a loop for a second. I'm all the way in. This is great. This is, there are like two different kinds of thrones in my mind now. It's like, there's dragon thrones, and then there's like drama thrones. And this, although labeled as a comedy, I think is like nailing the dramatic elements better than House of the Dragon has, sure, and better than late stage Thrones did. Like the small intimate stuff, staying in that one encampment, I think has been a huge boon for them, because you get a lot of great character moments in that, in this series. I'm digging it. This last episode was fantastic. Great stuff.
Great.
Yeah, I'm too behind. I'm going to catch up because it does seem like people like it. So I'm excited to kind of fall back into it. And then Iron Lung.
Yes.
Very cool. Very cool, self-funded, self-financed, independent movie from, if you're a YouTuber, Markiplier. His real name is Mark Fishback, right?
Mm-hmm.
Director, financier, stars in it. Really cool that a movie like that can make $30 million, self-funded, all that. The movie stunk. If I'm being honest, I did not like it. It is. I think there's some intrigue. I think it looks cool, especially for what it is and how he made it. Like, I think there's some cool look. There's a cool look to it. I don't hate the ideas. It is so goddamn fucking long. And I don't, if you've listened to me yap into a mic about movies for 8 years now, you know I don't like hitting movies on runtime. I love that David Lynch clip, right? Who gives a fuck how long it is? Just like I, give me long. Sometimes it's a problem. This is a problem.
It's a huge problem.
Preposterously long, like unbelievably long.
They repeat shots. Like there's a shot of blood pouring over a console that you see, I think, 100 times. I don't hate it as much as you.
It's 2 hours and 5 minutes, by the way, for those wondering.
2 hours, 5 minutes. It probably, honestly, like this should have been like a Twilight Zone episode. It's probably like 40 minutes. Like, and I'm not, it should not be a full length movie. It should have been like Black Mirror. It's something like that.
You called
like
it
that.
80 minutes too long in your Letterboxd review, I believe.
Yeah. I think that's pretty fair. I don't hate this. I think there's some interest. I think actually he's a decent actor.
Yeah.
He pretty cool. Yeah. He has to carry the whole movie. I like the idea of it. I like how it looked. There are certain things I like the score. There are things I did enjoy about it. I like the creative big swings you took. Way too long. Third act is abysmal. It's just bad. But the first act is interesting, and there's some pieces there, and I want to see this guy make another movie. I think there's some real talent there, and it's a lot to make a movie literally like almost all by yourself and have it be this decent. I'd give this like a 38.9 or a 41, something in there, I guess. Like,
I give it a 45.
Okay, so like that's not, to me, that's not horrible. I wouldn't say it stunk personally. I don't say it's good. I don't recommend it, but I don't know. There's some things there.
How would you guys compare it to Shelby Oaks, out of curiosity?
Oh, no. Shelby Oaks was ass. Shelby Oaks is a bad movie. This Waiter. Has some interesting elements to it and much better acting. This is a level above Shelby Oaks for me.
Gotcha.
I don't like either of them. I don't like either of them, but I think I like Shelby Oaks a little more. But it's kind of, if I'm being honest, it's like splitting hairs at this point. I would agree with Clemmer, though. I think he's got to hone it in. He's got to tighten things up. That'd be my biggest takeaway. But he has talent. He can definitely, he knows how to make a movie, like in terms of like the little things. He's got to kind of hone in, making it tighter, kind of making it flow better. Cause I think it was just like, whoa, it slogged for me pretty early on.
It'd be very funny if Stuckman reviewed this, Stuckmanized this movie and gives his first negative
review. His first negative review in like 5 years. He's like, fuck this shit. This shit stinks, brother. I don't know if those two know each other at all or a friend. I'm not quite sure.
Probably.
We were tweeting about it, Clemmer. Like, people were being kind of disingenuous about that. The Shelby Oaks versus Iron Lung, like, box office. Because, like, Iron Lung opened up.
I saw your tweet. You're dead on about this.
Yeah. It's like, they're totally different stratospheres release schedule-wise. So, yeah, like, it makes sense that this movie made more money. And plus,
it's making a lot more money, though. To be like, you're absolutely right, Kendrak, where this is open to way more theaters. But whatever that, like, zeitgeist that I'm not in the YouTube world at all, so I don't really understand. But whatever Markiplier has,
yeah, he has
way like, more strong apparently.
Yeah, I mean, he has 36 million more subscribers than yeah. Chris Duckman.
Yeah, that makes sense. Like just based on the box office numbers you're seeing, which are astronomical.
Though, and this is not what Kendrick's saying because I agree everything Kendrick said is spot on about this. The mistake Duckman made was this is when his movie should have released.
Correct,
for sure. It should have been now. It was in a gauntlet of like award season. It was a bonkers move to release it when they released it. That still didn't make much sense to me.
He wanted it was like right in October, right? I think I'm assuming the idea is he wanted the Halloween rush or whatever. But like Correct. You're going up against like seasoned veterans, IPs, like all this stuff. Like it's not a viable strategy.
Swamp Thing is their movie of the week this week on Super Critics.
Nice.
Superman 2 is out right now, so check that out. But yeah, I'm watching this tonight. Swamp Thing. Wes Craven. Swamp Thing.
Fuck yes, that nice. Rocks.
By the way, I looked up how long it takes to play through Iron Lung. 45 minutes to an hour. So so that's probably how long the movie was supposed to be. Jerks. I also did probably. Pick up, Jeff will like this one. Got the 4K nice. Of Nope, finally, and 4K yep. of Boogie Nights. It's a little sleep popping out. Oh, I also saw a movie while we were in San Francisco for The Dozen, which, by the way, go watch The Dozen Trivia. Great opening night. Went to the Metreon Theater, which is a theater I've always wanted to go to because it's like one of the big IMAXs in the country. Saw Avatar 3. A third time, baby. A third time. Oh,
you were missing for about 9 hours. I guess that's why. That makes sense. Yeah, we were staying by that theater, I believe, right? We were kind of like right there.
Yeah. Right across the street. Yep.
Oh, Start of the Pit. I get it now. Like I've been holding off on it because I don't like hospital shows. It's fucking good.
I can't do medical stuff.
I've held off on it forever because of the same reason. Finally, just had nothing to watch. Put it on. It's damn good.
This hopefully won't get me in trouble. I don't think we're supposed to say this or talk about it, but I will say there is another medical thing coming out.
Yes,
we did get to see a little bit of, and
I don't know what we're allowed to say, but. Whoa!
Apparently, still nothing. But like, big thumbs up. You can read into those tea leaves. Like big thumbs up. Like whoa, this is just like they're right back on right back where we left off.
Oh, and I watched Hamnet again. Liked it even more. It's what a fucking beautiful movie. Jesus Christ!
Hold the wall, Ken Jack. There we go.
Hey, it's all right. You know, we don't all like the same thing.
Stella Blue Coffee ready-to-drink can lattes are officially available nationwide at Target. That's right, whether you're making a Target run for toothpaste, paper towels, or somehow spending $200 on things you didn't know you needed, stop by the coffee section and see why everyone is turning to Stella Blue. The cans are made with 100% Colombian coffee, real dairy, real sugar, and contain 190 milligrams of caffeine. They've got dessert level flavor with coffee level function. You can choose from espresso, sweet cream, or espresso cafe mocha. And once you try them, you'll understand why they're the best canned lattes out there. Here's the best part. 100% of proceeds will go toward our We Brew to Rescue mission, in which we're funding the adoption of 1,000 pets across the country. Grab a Stella Blue at Target, taste the difference, and make a difference. Stella Blue Coffee.
Okay. Top 10 most anticipated movies of 2026 remaining of the year. Though I think if we did this list on January 1st, I think this is probably what the list would look like, except maybe Bone Temple. I'm up, then Ken Jack, then Clemmer, then Gooch, then it snakes back. The extra picks tonight, Ken Jack and myself. I'm up first. I think unfortunately for me, this is 1A, 1B, but I got to pick one. I think the top two are very clearly ahead of everything else by a pretty large margin, which is crazy to say because there is a third, which I'm very excited for, but I have to go with Dune Part 3. I'm not going to pick The Odyssey. It's just, I'm a big Dune fan. I know Clemmer laughs.
It's not on my list. It's 10th on my list. It's
Clemmer,
just funny.
Clemmer's, he's not, he's, you know, whatever.
I like Dune. It's fine. This is not more anticipated than The Odyssey. It's insane, but all right.
I don't think it is, though. I feel like you downplay the hype and love of Dune. It's like a two-time Best Picture nominee franchise.
It's a good movie. It's good. I don't think people run around like, as excited about Dune as you are. I think you're on this.
I think you are dead wrong on that. I think your viewpoint on Dune is like completely off. Hmm. Like I'm definitely up there as like a big fan, but I don't think like I'm inflating like anything here. Dune is a beloved friend. Like this is. Like I think you're off on this one. I don't know. Maybe the other guys don't agree. Maybe, I don't know what Kendrick and
very good. Gooch like fan. I think people are. I think it's very good. I think it's good. It's 10th on my list, the most anticipated. I'm looking forward to it. To say it's more anticipated than The Odyssey is madness.
For him,
that's fine. But that's.
I actually don't think. I don't think it's that far off. I'm telling you.
I think most people. I think the average person probably. And this is not on my list at all. So like the Avengers or Spider-Man is way more anticipated than Dune. Like I think Dune on most people's.
Well, Avengers. That's a whole different ball. That is a different ball of wax.
I think like Dune is in the back half of most people's most anticipated.
I don't agree with that. Completely disagree.
Okay. Yeah, I wouldn't agree.
Yeah, I don't.
It's like nearly $1 billion. The last one. What is that? Well, 775 roughly.
It's directed by one of the big name directors.
Chalamet, Zendaya, Pattinson. But I mean, this is like I don't know.
It's a big movie.
I know I'm in the top 1% of fans, but I'm telling you, I think the universal love for this is larger than you realize.
Maybe it is. I think that most people, and well, obviously the box office will tell a tale too. Would be more excited for, I said, the other movies I mentioned. I think the average person. And I say, I have this ahead of a lot of those movies myself. So
I think if we take our final list at the end of the day and you go and show it to people on the street and like did like rank choice, like, hey, which one of these top of these 10 movies, what are the top three you're most excited for? Dune's going to end up in like most of those.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think so.
I think Spider-Man, Avengers, and Odyssey would be ahead of Dune for most
people. I don't think Spider, like,
I think Avengers would probably be end up being like I know there's some pessimism around it, but like let's call a spade and be realistic here. If we're like doing like mainstream wide choice, but yeah, I don't know. Dune is my number one. Is my point. Also, I'm excited to see anything from this at some point. I assume we won't till the summer. That's my guess. But yeah, I'm very excited. Like I don't trust anyone more with material. Like I know there's thoughts about Dune Messiah and all that. I there's no one I trust more with material than Denis Villeneuve. He's like born to make these movies. He understands as well as anybody. So yeah, very, very fucking excited. Very, very excited. Ken Jack is two going to be what I would have had as two, my 1A, 1B.
Yeah, it'd be the Odyssey for me. And to me, it's like in my personal, it's like a 1A, 1B for sure. I would have Odyssey above Dune Part 3 as of right now, only because it looks so fucking different from like, not only just Christopher Nolan's typical thing, obviously, like he's never done anything like this. Like the cast crew involved, the sort of like scope of it being like a fantasy versus it being sci-fi. Like everything about it is so interesting to me. And every tease we get is better than the last. Like every new intro thing, every new little bit, it looks so fucking cool and so different. And I'm so excited to see what Nolan's got. And Jonathan Nolan was just saying he watched it too, and he's like, "Oh my god, it's insane!" Like, not that he would.
I don't know if he's seen this fucking movie already. By the way, he's a secretive guy. He's just ripping it for his family and friend. What are we doing here? We're a year away. You know, I guess we're not a year away. We're like 5 months away. But
yeah. So excited for this. Couldn't be more thrilled. With the idea of it too, because we don't get a lot of movies from like this sort of, you know, like era or whatever. It's still fantasy, but like you don't get a lot of that sort of sword and sandal-ish stuff anymore. Like you feel like there's just been a huge break from it because of costs. It's definitely a high thing to sort of do budgetary wise. But man, I'm pumped up for it.
They played the prologue before Avatar the other night on that big screen. God, fucking damn, that prologue by like minute four, you are legitimately levitating out of the seat. It is insane. And Ludwig Göransson's score sounds fucking incredible. Oh, yeah. I cannot wait for this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this shit's unbelievable. This would have been my 1A, 1B, obviously. I'm worried about how much hype is in my head for both these movies, but I do think they're both going to clear. It's nice to put unrealistic trust into someone like Christopher Nolan and Denis Villeneuve. Yeah. So.
I mean, you're getting two great directors. Like, I think you'll be in good hands.
It'd be a stunner if either of these was below really good. I'll put it that way. So.
The Odyssey hype is hitting like that rare zone where I'm like, I know this, like, it's not going to be the greatest movie ever made, but like, what if it is? Like, it's getting to that point in my head.
Think about all the stuff like we haven't seen. Like, we haven't even seen like Charlize Theron is playing like a relatively major role in this. We haven't even seen her yet. Like, there's so much shit that we haven't even gotten a glimpse of out of this movie yet. So very, very pumped.
Yeah, I'm very, very excited. All right, number three, let's hear it, Clemmer. The Bride, baby, right? Number three, most anticipated of the year.
Not in my top 10, The Bride, unfortunately. Although I'm very excited for it. It's number two.
It's apparently terrible, though, right? Have we not heard that? Has that been like the thing?
I choose not to acknowledge those such things. It's number two on my first. So I have two lists. I have one for the most next 100 days, top 10 anticipated. I just carry with me all the time. But this is for the year. This is my personal one. So, like Jeff, like you said, you took Dune. That's your thing. I'm taking Disclosure Day. I'm getting Spielberg. I'm getting Aliens. Like, let's go. I'm all in. I'm so excited for this. I love the weird noises coming out of Emily Blunt. Like, I'm very, very, very excited for this. This excites me personally more than, like, a Marvel movie does. So that's why I have this.
This would be my number three as well.
For most... That's your number three as well? Okay, good. Mm-hmm. Good. I think for most people, they probably would pick a Marvel movie here. But for me, it's this.
No, this is my three too. Okay, absolutely.
Good. I mean, I do not get me wrong. Like, I am, man. If you tell me that it's a 75 out of 100 with nostalgia slop, I'm gonna be cheering. I'm gonna be beyond happy for Avengers Doomsday. But like, if you're gonna like, you give me Nolan, Villeneuve, and Spielberg Alien movie, like, there's not many things that would like jump ahead of Dooms. Like, but that's gonna be the three. Like, that is like, you're hitting me with like. Like as a movie guy, like, that's just gonna be the three. Like, that, those. I'm very, very excited. Spielberg Alien movie, like, come on.
Are you concerned at all by the? This is like what's keeping it from like that upper tier. I would say those first two movies we drafted are in their own tier, like that S tier. This is right at the top of the A tier, but the CGI, there is a weird look to some of the CGI in this trailer, right?
We'll see. You know, you never know.
It is a we'll see.
The day Denis Villeneuve misses will be the first day he misses. Nolan's worst is a movie that I still like in Tenet, right? Or like a movie that might be everyone's worst, but like, right. Like, his misstep in recent memories is a movie that I really enjoy. Spielberg's had some stinkers, but his last two movies are fantastic. And I do think that's big. Like, The Fabelmans was great. I love West Side Story. So it's like, I there's some trust here for me. For sure.
Yeah.
Gooch, you have two in a row, 4 and 5.
Number four. I'm going to go with one of our great directors who doesn't work too often, but when he does, man, does he put out good movies. That's Martin McDonagh, who has a movie releasing later this year called Wild Horse 9, starring Sam Rockwell and John Malkovich as CIA agents in the 70s on a nice little road trip to Easter Island, which... That sounds awesome. That sounds awesome. Everything on paper sounds great. I think Sam Rockwell in a McDonagh script is a perfect pairing. And Malkovich always turns up. This is probably not going to be like, in terms of box office, the big hitter. But in terms of, if I had to place a bet right now on something to possibly dethrone The Odyssey as like the clear best picture front runner, this would be my bet. I think McDonagh has like, never missed for me. Every single movie I come away wowed. So Wild Horse 9 at number 4. Then at number 5, we gotta get this on the list. Digger, starring Tom Cruise. I don't love most of Iñárritu's work, but Tom Cruise leaving IP, leaving franchise, coming back to a drama. I mean, if you've been a fan of movies for the past 30 years, I don't know how you cannot be like through the roof for this movie.
Yeah, I this is a weird one for me. So Birdman's one of my favorite movies ever made. I think Birdman is a masterpiece. I don't love The Revenant. That other movie he made, Bardo or whatever, was bad. So this would be lower on my list. This would be in my top 10, but it would be lower. The Cruise angle is significantly more important to me than the Iñárritu angle on this. Because just like if Cruise wasn't involved, this wouldn't even be sniffing my top 10, if I'm being completely honest with you.
No.
But the Cruise involvement is a big part of it. So yeah, this would be my top 10 because of our boy Tom.
Yeah, and he's wearing prosthetics. He's got he's basically looks like from reports, looks like his Les Grossman character in the movie. Like he's got the balding head and like the deformed body. So looking forward to that.
I do want to see more, though. That is for sure.
Playing like a multi-dimensional, maybe layered character for the first time, it feels like in a little while. You know what I mean?
I'm
like,
so excited for this.
Just fucking cool. Like, he's a really damn good actor. And like he's still good, obviously, in all these other movies that we like. But like it's just getting a chance to flash the shit that we see maybe in like Born on the 4th of July again. Like, holy shit. Getting to see that muscle flexed, I'd love that.
Yeah.
Clemmer, you have number 6.
Yeah, this is a movie that's coming out in the next 100 days. Project Hail Mary.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm really excited for this. The trailer, this is just like a fun movie. I trust Lord and Miller to do kind of like this guy alone. We saw it with like Last Person on Earth. And then Ryan Gosling's great. And this looks like just from the trailer, looks like a really well-made film. I'm really excited for this. I mean, that's a clear pick for me there. It drops off for me a bit after this.
Yeah, Project Hail Mary, the rumors are it's very good. The rumors are that it's going to be a movie that contends for Best Picture from March until the end of the year. That was also a comment dropped by a good friend of Barstool's, Justin Kroll, who you can go over and see writing on Deadline. Justin Kroll is also the one who first talked about – he was first on F1 getting a Best Picture nomination before everybody. He said Project Hail Mary is like the movie that people are saying, like, this could be one of those ones that just lasts all year. It's gonna be that well received. We'll see. I'm very excited for it though. This also would have been top 10 for me. I'm a huge Ryan Gosling fan. So, very excited for it. Also Lord Miller. I think they had a pretty good track record. So looking forward to that. Ken Jack, number 7.
All mine got taken off the board already. So I think my next logical one would be up. I think it's kind of hard. I think I'll go with Spider-Man, actually, because I'm looking through this list. And I think especially after watching Wonder Man with Cretton.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think Wonder Man had me hyped for the movie so much more.
Like everything Cretton has done so far, like as like Shang-Chi, like everything that he's done, like I've liked and for the most. And I think he has just a really good eye for a new version of superhero action. And like he's just very good at making you like, I don't know, get a renewed interest in maybe something you wouldn't have before. Spider-Man, I feel like it's been a little while for him. When did No Way Home come out? Like 3-4 years ago now?
2021. December.
Yeah, damn. Oh, yeah. A long time ago. So, yeah, I feel like getting to see it back on big screen after a long time is going to be fun. And I think he just has a good eye for action, too. It was very funny seeing like the sort of, what is that? Like John Watts said, like, yeah, whatever you do, don't have them practically swing. And then like it just cuts to like fucking Tom Holland on the wires just going flying through the street in Edinburgh or whatever. Man, I love that. I'm excited to see a different look at Holland Spider-Man.
Yeah, that would be top 10 for me as well, though. I would have flipped this with my 8, and that is Doomsday. I'm like I said, the bar is low for me. But I got a good scoop next week, let me put it that way. I got a confidence boosting report that I was like, okay, interesting. They were supposed to put their trailers during the Super Bowl and they actually backed it. They typically don't. There's reasons for that because they typically don't have to. And why would you spend the money on a Super Bowl commercial when you don't have to? And they were supposed to, and they are not anymore, which is there's thumbs up reasons for that, apparently. Whether that comes to fruition or not, I don't know. But I am excited for this. The hype and vibe around what you've heard, it's very interesting. Marvel movies, for the most part, typically what you hear is kind of what happens. Like, it's very rare that you hear with a Marvel movie or DC movie, for that matter, hey, this movie is going to be dog water. And then it's like, boy, were they wrong, right? Like, the rumors kind of always seem to be that way. And so far, it's like people are talking pretty positively about it. So we'll see. I'm excited to see the X-Men. It'd be very fun if this was good, and the Russos are just only good at making one type of movie. Like, they can't literally do anything else. Like, they just know how to make Avengers. Well, that's unfair. Arrested Development.
Arrested Development, yeah.
Community as well. They're also very good at that. But it would be very funny if like they just they either make really well received big budget swinging universe Avengers movies or dog shit movies like The Electric State. It's like what a crazy difference. I am very excited for this.
I forget about Cherry. We're reviewing that next week.
Yeah, there'll be some bonkers ass reveals and things, and I think it's gonna be fun. I also the big thing that I keep saying too is that apparently did shoot this, like they tried not to do as much green and blue screen, which is like, if that's the way we go, great. That's at least a positive. Ken Jack, number 9 for you.
There's a few on here I think I'm like interested in. I think I'll go with Werewolf because I did like Nosferatu a fair bit, and I do love everything Eggers. And I think like
that would have been my next pick.
I think the worst thing you could say about it is like, hey, find new cast members, maybe my guy, like work with someone you haven't worked with before. But like other than that, I kind of like everything he's ever made. And I think he's going to make another movie in the same sort of genre or whatever you want to call it, like mixed universe of werewolf to vampire, whatever. I'm going to be there. I'm either day one. So love Eggers. Going to go see Werewolf.
So for the last one for me, I mean, this is just a bias pick. It's been fucking 7 years since we've seen a Star Wars movie on the big screen. That's simply too fucking long. Just too long for me. I love The Mandalorian. The last season was great, but I kind of trust him that this is going to be a fun time. This needs to be a big sweeping, you know, universe changing type thing. I'm excited to see the trailer for the Super Bowl, a little more extended look at it. Probably a couple other ones that I'm sure are going to be better movies on here, but I can't even, I'm not going to sit here and fucking lie to you people. We don't do this podcast, sit here and lie to you. I'm way too big of a Star Wars fan to pretend this is not one of the most anticipated of the year. I'm very excited. Mm-hmm. Just excited to hear some Star Wars themes and cues and fucking Ludwig Göransson again. Very excited. A couple other leftover ones. I know people kind of dump on it, even though it's like it's still really good. Like, why would Toy Story 5 not be good? Like, 4 was still like really it was a really good Pixar movie. Like, why would 5 suck? Like, they put so much care into the Toy Story movies that I trust it. Godzilla Minus Zero, I also had as another one.
Yeah, that's right.
I hope it's good. Hunger Games, we've all seemed to put some hype into Hunger Games: Sunrise and the Reaping quite a bit. I think that you want to talk about a movie that looks fucking awesome, that looks very cool. And then two comedy franchises returning this year that I'm excited for. The Jackass movies kind of don't miss. They've all kind of been really enjoyable. So I'm excited for Jackass 5. I'm pumped for Scary Movie 6. Is it going to be good? Probably not. But like, it's been a while. Like, it's not going to be like superhero movie and those shitty ones, right? Like, it's not going to be like they're actually doing like a real scary movie. I'm excited to go sit down in a theater and watch a straight fucking R-rated comedy spoof movie. Like, I you know what? Maybe it's bad, maybe whatever, but I won't pretend I'm not kind of excited about that.
On my list, I had The Great Beyond, which is a J.J. Abrams. I guess that looks really interesting, telling kind of like a writer who finds out his stuff is actually, it's real. It's with Anne Hathaway. It takes place in the 80s. Flowervale Street, I believe, is with Anne Hathaway. That's the one that is same director as It Follows. That looks really interesting.
Good movie.
She has 6 movies coming out this year.
The Dog Stars, which is a good book that I read, a post-apocalyptic. We're getting Jacob Elordi. Ridley Scott directed it. I'm excited for that one. And then Clayface, I'm a DC guy. I'm kind of interested to see what Mike Flanagan does with Clayface. Those were the 4 just missed for me.
Yeah, I think Supergirl is like on the radar for me for sure, just because I like Craig Gillespie and most of his work. Death of Robin Hood, I keep getting, every time I see a new thing for Death of Robin Hood with Hugh Jackman, I get more excited for it. It looks really damn cool. I love Boosters, which they just had the trailer for. Yep. Boots Riley, he's got like one of the coolest visual styles I think of any working director, and that looks so weird and different, and I'm very excited.
I love Sorry to Bother You too, so
yeah,
that looks exactly fucking awesome.
The drama too, I think I'm pretty excited for as well.
Me too.
The drama I'm excited for reasons which I don't even know if it's gonna be. I'm just so intrigued. Again, I can't stop thinking about this. It's such a, could be a wild ass movie.
Highest left off my list. Tell me if you're interested in this cast: Keanu Reeves, Kirsten Dunst, Daniel Brühl, Nicholas Braun, Tobias Menzies. Directed by Ruben Östlund. The entertainment system is down. This movie sounds fucking awesome. It's just a long haul flight where the entertainment system goes down. That is the premise of the movie. Yeah. That is my number 7 on the year. That sounds fucking awesome. Godzilla Minus Zero, or yeah, Minus Zero, the follow-up to Minus One. That's going to be, I think, a hit. Takashi Yamazaki. He crushed that first one. It was so good. I Want Your Sex. That apparently stinks. That's got to get that one out of there. Still on my list from the beginning of the year. Then there's like Artificial, the Luca Guadagnino, Sam Altman biopic with Andrew Garfield starring. I think that could be really interesting and probably funny. There's some good. I mean, this is, I think, going to be the best year of the decade, best year of the last decade. It's already off to probably the best start of the last decade. This is a awesome fucking year. Awesome. Teenage Sex and Death at Camp Miasma, the Schoenbrunn follow-up to, what was that movie? With Justice Smith.
Yeah.
I loved it. Oh, God. What was it? I saw the TV glow.
Yeah.
Yep. Great movie. Oh, have it on the shelf behind me.
Danny Boyle's
got even like upcoming movies. Like I know, Jeff, you shit on The Bride, How to Make a Killing. I'm honestly, like, I'm more excited about Scream 7 than I am for Scary Movie, but I don't know if I put that in my top. But
oh, fuck that movie. Fuck everything about that movie.
I'm definitely not more excited about that franchise, yeah.
I guess it's tracking really well. It's like 30 million, 35 million opening weekend.
I believe that.
Yeah, you can bet on it.
I definitely believe that.
I didn't know if it would take a step back.
Yeah, this is going to be this is going to be one of the all-time years box office wise.
This pandemic anyway.
Yeah, but I guess a better way to put it, in terms of $1 billion movies, let's put it that way. You might see what is the most $1 billion movies we've ever seen in one single year. So there have been 59 $1 billion movies of all time, billion or more. I don't know what year.
I don't know if it's going to catch 2019, but that was like an all-time year. But like you said, decade? Yeah, I think so.
2025 saw 4 billion dollar movies, 2024 saw 3, 2023 saw 2, 2022 saw 2. One in 2021. So 2019 had a lot. I didn't realize that. 2019 had $9 billion movies. Yeah. 2018 had $5 billion movies. 17, 16, 15. So the big one was 2019. This year, though, I mean, there are a lot of movies that are going to make a fuckload of money.
You might get 6. You might get 5 or 6.
Yeah, you're going to, like...
It's pretty good.
I would say The Odyssey probably won't. Oppenheimer didn't get it. I think it would be a pretty big feat if The Odyssey got it.
This is such a more international story, though.
Man, but it doesn't. Oppenheimer didn't get it, and Oppenheimer had one of the all-time marketing viral campaigns in movie history, though.
Yeah, so that won't get it, but like Minions will, though.
And Minions will. Toy Story 5 will. Super Mario will. Avengers Doomsday will. Spider-Man will. So that's at least 5 right there.
Right.
And then, yeah, and maybe an Odyssey gets it. It's unlikely. Maybe a Dune gets it. It's very unlikely. But there could be some other things that sneak in there.
Dune Part 2 made 714. Dune Part 1 is pandemic, so you kind of can't count that.
Yeah, and Dune Part 1 was on... I watched it on a fucking HBO Max. So
it made 7, so probably not. Yeah.
It would take a surprise to hit the same as 2019. Again, maybe the Odyssey does. I don't expect it, because, I don't think it'll have the ground. I mean, it's going to make a shitload of money.
It's got all the premium screens for a month. I think it easily gets to a
Oppenheimer
billion.
Made 975, Jeff. Like, I think Odyssey's more palatable to, like,
it's a story
audience.
That everyone knows.
It's got massive stars
across the board. I think there's no way it doesn't make $1 billion, to be honest. I think you're crazy.
You think there's no way? I think it's more of a debate than I think you. I don't think it's as much of a shoo-in as some of these other ones.
Like Minions is a shoo-in.
Well, yeah, it's not Minions.
No.
Know. I just, it is definitely like it's a big story, but it's also like, oh, the Michael Jackson is going to make $1 billion.
Yeah.
Like for sure, I think like for sure it's a $1 billion.
Jesus Christ! I think you're probably right. I guess.
Yeah.
I think that one's gonna be a fucking monster.
Really?
I don't know. I'll say this. I hope I'm not right about that. I hope Odyssey makes $1.5 billion. But yeah. I'd be interested to see, though, just because it's not. I mean, I guess it is. It's more of a wide-reaching thing, an international thing, than the story of Oppenheimer. But also. I don't know how mainstream palatable it is either, but it will make a shitload of money. It definitely.
Oppenheimer came damn close, Jeff.
Yeah, but again, Oppenheimer is part of one of the most unbelievable viral marketing campaigns we've ever seen. Like, it changed the game in movie marketing. Like, it's a fucking it's like a gate, right? It's like the term, you know, blank gate. Like, the idea of combining two movie names to like market something.
Well, we might get the same thing.
I hope I'm wrong. I hope Odyssey makes a shitload of money.
We might get it with you and Doomsday. It's like
one of those movies should fucking move. I probably should be fucking Doomsday at this point. Doomsday ain't getting the screens. Dune's getting all the screens. They're getting all the IMAX.
They have their clock. They have their clock. They can't move off.
I know.
They put the clock up.
That's true.
Yeah, that is true. I actually, as a Dune fan, I'd rather Dune move simply because I think it's better for award season stuff. But that's a whole different. I've said that 100 times already. So,
like, push it until November.
Yeah, I just think it's just a better. I think
you're right.
For something like that, it's just a better time for them.
I agree.
I'm excited to see what the worst movie of the year is, though. Very excited to see.
The worst movie of the year?
I'm excited to see what beats Return to Silent Hill.
Scream 7 might be that movie.
That's brutal. You're such a Scream guy, too. That's brutal.
You're that upset that...
They've shit all over you, the fans. They have no respect for you.
They have no respect. No respect, Jeff. They took out my favorite sisters, and they've just rehashed everything, and now it looks like shit. They're doing fucking sports betting ads in the middle. You can AI yourself into the fucking movie. Fuck everything about this stupid ass.
Oh, no. Really?
They're launching this thing where you can AI yourself into scenes. Fuck that. Hey, y'all. It's Gooch. Congratulations on making it this far into Project Big Screen Episode 19. Now, I forgot to bring this up while we were recording, but I do have your all's most anticipated movies of the year, the fan rankings. And here they are. Number one, no surprise, it's The Odyssey. Number two, Project Hail Mary. Number three, Dune Part 3, or Dune Messiah, whatever we're calling it right now. Number four, Disclosure Day. Number five, The Drama. I was wrong. You guys are very interested in that drama trailer. Number six, Digger. Number seven, How to Make a Killing. Number eight, Avengers Doomsday. Number nine, Spider-Man, Brand New Day. And number 10, The Bride. Didn't see that one coming. Couple surprises in there, to say the least. Now, if you're not a part of the fan rankings and you want to join, don't worry. It's super easy. All I want you to do is comment below with your Letterboxd handle. But first, you got to answer a question. What is your personal most anticipated movie of the year? Maybe it's a pick that, you know, people aren't talking about, or a pick that people are already kind of poo-pooing. Maybe you're excited for Scream 7. I don't know. But comment that below, whether you're watching on YouTube or listening on Spotify, with your Letterboxd handle. Make sure to include that, and I will follow you from the Project Big Screen account, and that way you will be part of our fan rankings. Thank you so much for listening, for supporting. Make sure you're subscribed. Make sure you're, you know, signed up everywhere you need to be signed up, and keep doing all the things that let us keep doing this podcast. It really means the world to us. Thank you so much. Now back to the pod.
All right. Good stuff. Next week, we do have...
What are we doing next week?
A bigger movie next week. I could be completely wrong on that, though.
Well, we have Wuthering Heights.
We have Wuthering Heights next week. So next week, we'll be reviewing Wuthering Heights and Good Luck, Have Fun, Don't Die, which will include an interview with the director, Gore Verbinski, as well. Mm-hmm. So yeah, those are the two we're reviewing next week.
There's also next week. There's a bunch of movies coming out. I think next week we also have a Goat, which is
I was about to say fucking say Goat, brother. Say it. I know you'll be there day one.
I won't be there day one. I will be there eventually. And then Crime 101.
Yeah, Hemsworth.
Crime 101. So we'll talk about Crime 101 and Goat. I'm sure now. I'm going to see Goat. So we'll talk about it. Clumber. Crime 101. I'm definitely going to try and see before next Sunday as well.
I'll try. I don't know if I'll be able to see it by next Sunday, because if I have to see the other two movies, like...
Good Luck, Have Fun, Don't Die, and Wuthering Heights will be our main ones, but we'll definitely try and sneak. And then
I'll see one of either Goat or Crime 101.
A couple other things in the next few weeks as well, and then I think it starts to really kick into gear. End of the month, we have Scream 7. Can't wait.
Mimics.
Shitting on the fans.
Might score low. It might score lower than Mercy. Can we do a zero?
Come on. No.
Zero of viable score.
You can't go in thinking that, though.
I can, and I will.
The Scream movies were plenty good before Jenna Ortega was.
You want to know a sequel coming out that we're going to review the same week as Project Hail Mary that I don't care about, and the first one was good? Ready or Not 2.
I kind of like the first one.
I like the trailer.
I did like the first one, but I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah. I keep seeing the trailer with who's the dude, Kevin Durant. Not Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant. When he's like hovering over, about to like stab, and he blows up, and I'm like, okay, I'm back in. I want to see
Sarah Michelle Gellar in there. All right.
Yeah, Elijah Wood.
Yeah,
the new Kenna Grace.
Was that Nestor Carbonell too?
Now, we're a big Nestor Carbonell podcast.
Oh yeah,
we are huge Nestor Carbonell guys.
Here we go. I mean, you get your Nestor fix. What more do you want?
You ever see Lost? Anyway, have you fucking Dark Knight? This guy's got a repertoire.
Morning show.
Yeah,
that's it.
Of course.
For Ken Jack, Gooch, Clemmer, I'm Jeffy Lowe. We'll talk to you next time.
Stella Blue Coffee's new can lattes are here. Crafted with 100% Colombian coffee, each can is a good source of protein and comes in two smooth flavors, espresso cafe mocha and espresso sweet cream. And whether you're braving your morning commute or chasing your pup, Stella Blue cans are for those always on the go and for those who care. Stella Blue is more than just great coffee. It's about giving back. I named the brand after my rescue dog, Stella, who inspired our mission to help more dogs find their forever homes. Every purchase supports animal rescue organizations, so when you drink Stella Blue, you're not just fueling your day, you're saving a dog's life. Try the new cans today, taste the difference, and make a difference. All new Stella Blue coffee can lattes now available at StellaBlueCoffee.com or subscribe on Amazon for 10% off.